Benjamin Netanyahu told us in a tweet last week, this fulfills a dream of 40 years. This is a joint Israel-U.S. madness creating havoc for the world.
With all due respect to this so-called professor, Iran is the aggressor. Iran is the one who is spreading this radical ideology.
I'm struggling right now over this definition of evil. What about the decades in which Palestinians lived under a brutal regime of structural apartheid?
It's simply revisionist history. Over the last 2.5 years, Israelis have been living in shelters, attacked over our peaceful border, and it all leads back to Iran.
This has nothing to do with America. This is Israel's problem. Yeah, you wipe that smile off your face real quick there, Mr. Israeli spokesman.
The new Ayatollah shares not only a name and a bloodline with his assassinated father, but also many of his hardline views. America and Israel are sworn enemies. Dissent and protest must be crushed. Weakness and chaos in the region makes its neighbours easier to control. It's therefore no surprise, under current circumstances, that Israel says it will kill the new Ayatollah and the one after that. None of this brings us anywhere closer to any of the stated justifications for going to war. In fact, it's the opposite. And many people are still struggling to answer the two prerequisite questions. Why is the US at war? And why does it have to be now? Well, last week, Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, and many others said it had to be now because Israel was going to do it anyway. The so-called imminent threat was actually the threat of a retaliation to Israeli aggression. Unsurprisingly, they hurriedly walked that back. But this narrative that the Israeli tail wagged the American dog is not going away. The Wall Street Journal reports that Senator Lindsey Graham flew several times to Israel in order to coach Netanyahu on how to persuade President Trump to join the war. And Antony Blinken, the former Secretary of State, said they've seen this playbook before.
This has been a long story when it comes to Iran. And back during the Obama administration, the Israelis were pushing President Obama to take military action against Iran and were warning that they would do it themselves if he didn't. And he wouldn't because he thought the better way to get at the nuclear program, which is what we were focused on, was through very muscular diplomacy backed up by very, very strong sanctions that we rallied the world to put in place. And then we got the Iran nuclear agreement.
An esteemed panel is standing by, and in a moment we'll hear from UN Ambassador Danny Danon, one of Israel's most senior diplomats who lives and works in New York. We'll begin with Professor Jeffrey Sachs, a senior advisor to United Nations, who joins me now. Professor Sachs, always great to have you on Uncensored, but particularly after the last week or so. Just first of all, your overview about this war, which nobody wants to call a war, and where we are 9-10 days into it.
It's a war, and thousands are being killed. Israel and the United States are carpet bombing Tehran, and there's lots of death, schoolgirls being killed, a bloodbath underway. At the same time, the world economy is about to go into one of the biggest crises in the modern period, driven by the complete collapse of oil supplies coming from this region, a predictable consequence of the Israeli-U.S. aggression. So this is a calamity. This was a war of choice. Benjamin Netanyahu told us in a tweet last week, this fulfills a dream of 40 years. This is a war not caused only by Israel. This is a joint Israel-U.S. madness. The U.S. wants to rule the world, and Israel wants to rule its region, the Middle East, and they partner together. So it's not really right to say that Israel determined this or the U.S. determined this. This is a partnership. It was interesting that you had Tony Blinken on just a moment ago. He partnered in the genocide in Gaza. It was the same with his administration, a U.S.-Israel partnership that goes back decades. It has created a disaster around the Middle East, absolute disaster from Libya to Iran, with many countries desolate and destroyed in between. And it now will create a disaster for the whole world. I know you're going to have Ambassador Danny Dunn on after me. He represents, in my view, a government that is doing more damage to the world and to humanity than any other government. He doesn't like my saying that, but that is actually the point, together with his partner, the United States. Both of them are rogue nations led by megalomaniacs, creating havoc for the world completely unnecessarily.
Well, you actually confronted Danny Danon at the UN. Let's take a look.
Yes.
Well, it was an extraordinary encounter. What were you actually saying to him?
I was saying that Israel is committing suicide because it is destroying any remnant of sympathy or empathy in the United States and all over the world. So I said that that suicide was tragic. We have polls, Pierce, that show that for decades, U.S. sympathy ran 60 to 70% for Israel, 15% for Palestine. Now they run 41% for Palestine, 36% for Israel. In other words, the American public is on the side of Palestine, and that's going to grow dramatically. What's going to happen, whether Mr. Danon or his colleagues like it or not, the world is going into a profound economic crisis in the coming weeks and months. And this is Israel's choice. Israel set this off together with the United States. The world will pay a fearsome price for this delusion. And people will know where this came from. It's very, very sad. Very sad.
Israel. Age hits you like a brick, and earlier than you think. It turns out that most men begin losing testosterone around the age of 30, about 1% every year. And even worse, a lot of what your body makes is blocked by proteins in the blood. Well, Mars Men helps turn back the clock naturally and free up usable testosterone. No needles, no synthetics, just real support. Users report feeling stronger, their recovery is better, and their energy is steady. Mars Men has 8 natural, clinically dosed ingredients. It's made in the United States and it's third-party tested. They offer a 90-day money-back guarantee with no risk. More than 91% of users report higher energy and thousands swear by it. For a limited time, Uncensored viewers get 50% off for life, plus free shipping and 3 free gifts at mengotomars.com. It's a perfect way to kick off the new year strong. That's mengotomars.com for 50% off and 3 free gifts at checkout. After your purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that I sent you. Right. Is there a way that it could work in the sense that it appears from the amount of missiles that they're putting up that the Iranian capacity to attack back is receding very quickly, which is unsurprising given the overwhelming superiority, of course, of the American military coupled with the Israeli military. But is there a moment in here where if all their military firepower is pretty well taken out, that the regime begins to collapse from within?
Look, I'm not able to answer any definitive military judgment, but the people who are opining on this around the world believe that that is not the case, that Iran has held together and will continue to hold together, has vast arsenals of missiles and drones. And we'll see, because this war is not ending in the next few days. And Israeli generals themselves have said publicly this could go on into the fall. And the American public is being prepared for a long war. So even the progenitors of this war are not claiming that this is about to be won. I don't hear that from anybody. I don't see it in the markets either, in the soaring oil prices. I don't see it in the behavior of energy producers, suppliers, and shippers. I don't see it in the shutdown of production in Qatar on its gas and Iraq on its oil and the destruction of oil fields. I see a calamity building and lot of blood flowing. It's a kind of mass murder of civilians by Israel and the United States. This is shocking, actually. We should keep it in mind. This is not targeted bombing. This is carpet bombing Tehran. And I've been speaking on the phone with absolutely desperate people in Tehran in the last 48 hours, and it's carpet bombing. And they're killing indiscriminately. So this is a disaster that is not likely to go away. No one's claiming in Israel or the U.S. that it's likely to go away. And the consequences for the world will be utterly awful. And Piers, we have a lot of Americans. We have a very particular society. We have a lot of Americans who are saying, move on. This is Armageddon coming. This is this is the promised end of the world. We are hearing lots of reports about this being preached in the military. We're seeing a lot of people who believe that the worse it gets, the closer we are to the second coming of Jesus Christ. And that's a motivating factor in the United States, I have to tell you. It's a significant part of Mr. Trump's base. And so bad news is not necessarily deterrence. It may just mean escalation to Armageddon. It is a grim situation that we're in. We've not seen anything like it, actually, since World War II. This is even beyond the Iraq War. They then had, I won't say the dignity, but they then had the impulse to hide the motivations. Here, there is no impulse to hide the motivations. It's just complete kill anybody kill everybody and overturn this society of 100 million people and an ancient society of 5,000 years. So it's dreadful.
Professor Jeffrey Sachs, I've interviewed you many times. I don't think I've ever heard you speaking with such raw emotion, but I appreciate you coming back.
We're heading to World War III, and we're being led by extraordinarily violent governments in Israel and the United States. And you'll hear a great defense in a moment by a skilled Israeli diplomat. But what they are doing to the world is absolutely unforgivable, and it will be recognized as such. And it's a tragedy. That's why I didn't use the word homicide when I talked to Mr. Dan, and I used the word suicide, because what Israel is doing is committing suicide.
There are passionate arguments on all sides of this. Of course there are. Do you have any sympathy with Israel's clear, look, there's a massive majority support for this in Israel, for what's happening in Iran, because the Israeli people have reached a general consensus that they believe Iran has been responsible for most of their problems in the last few decades, with these proxy terror groups just constantly trying to attack them. And that has caused this massive security crisis, as they see it, which has to be somehow brought to an end. Do you have any sympathy with the way the average Israeli feels about this and why they're supporting this?
Well, I understand it just the same as if you swapped them out with any other nation in the world in the same position, if there was such a situation. It's fine, but it has nothing to do with the United States. And this goes back to a falsehood that Danny Danon said earlier in your show, where he was claiming that ever since the Iranian Revolution of 1979, Iran has been at war with Israel this way. But that's not true. Israel stayed friends with Iran all through the 1980s. As everyone knows, when Ronald Reagan switched sides in the Iran-Iraq war for a minute and sold weapons to the Ayatollah, he used the Israelis as the cutout because they had the ongoing operation. And I highly suggest everyone, especially you, Pierce, read this fantastic book by Trita Parsi called Treacherous Alliance, about the real history of America, Israel, and Iran's relationship throughout that period. And where he shows that it was in 1993 when Yitzhak Rabin simply changed his strategy and Israel turned on Iran, and Iran started funding Hamas after that. And now after Rabin was killed, the Likud basically took up the same policy of demonizing Iran, but instead of using it as an excuse for dealing with the Palestinians, they used it as an excuse to distract from the fact that they were going to never deal with the Palestinians in good faith. But it was the Israelis who turned on the Iranians first, and that wasn't until 1993. And Parsi even has Clinton administration officials laughing because the Israelis are demanding that America be hard on Iran when 1 week ago they were taking Iran's side in the very same type arguments and all that. The book is called Treacherous Alliance. It's absolutely fantastic, and it shows all that. And then this is also, crucially, the basis for the argument in the Clean Break strategy by David Wormser and Richard Perle in 1996, when Benjamin Netanyahu was first coming to office the first time. These are American neoconservatives who wrote this policy that says the clean break is with Oslo, said we're never going to deal with the Palestinians. We're going to take what they have. But in order to be able to get away with that, we need a whole new position of dominance in the region. And in order to do that, our first priority is we have to break the arch of power between Iran, Syria, and Hezbollah. And they said the way we want to do that is by getting rid of Saddam Hussein, which sounds insane, and it is. He was the Sunni roadblock in this Shiite arc of power here. But they thought that Turkey and Jordan would be dominant in the new Iraq, and then they would get the Iraqi Shiites to tell Hezbollah to stop being friends with Iran and start making nice with Israel. It's called the Clean Break, a new strategy for securing the realm.
Okay.
And the partner companion piece is called Coping with Crumbling States. And this is the naive pipe dream of the neoconservatives and the Likud. And this was the policy behind Iraq War II, which Netanyahu, of course, champion, and his neoconservative fifth column in America champion, and which backfired and only resulted in America fighting an 8-year war to install Iran's best friends from Dawa and the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in power there, and to build their militias into the Iraqi army. And as I said, Iraq War III against the caliphate also was literally for Iran and their friends on the ground when the Iranian Quds Force liberated Tikrit from ISIS. They had American airplanes flying overhead. And all this just goes to show, the vast divergence of interests between Israel and the United States. And one more point here, and I'll be quiet and you guys can keep arguing for the rest of the show. But we already on the first day had a blowback terrorist attack from Israel's war in my hometown of Austin, Texas. And three innocent people were murdered by a Muslim immigrant who went down to the bar. Yeah, you wipe that smile off your face real quick there, Mr. Israeli spokesman. Murdered three of my hometown.
Austin. Why would I smile when you got a Muslim
more,
that's killing a bunch
and
of
And there
Americans.
Was, shut up, shut your damn mouth while I'm talking. And there was also an attempted bombing attack at the
what
American embassy
here,
in Norway
Pierce,
last night. And Americans are already dying and suffering blowback terrorism from another war on behalf of Israel. Just like Omar Mateen's slaughter in Orlando, just like San Bernardino,
Scott, I've got to jump in.
Blowback from Israel's foreign policy.
Okay. I just want to end very quickly with you, Doran, if I may. Looking at the prediction markets, poly market, they ask what price will crude oil hit by the end of March? A lot of money coming in here with options ranging from $40, so a lot less than it is now, to $200. I don't think it's too big a stretch to say that politically, you know, I saw Netanyahu is calling for a potential election in Israel in the summer. Donald Trump is facing the midterms in America in November. Should oil reach $200 a barrel, then it is, I would argue, never mind militarily, never mind all the reasons you put forward for why this is a good idea, never mind anything else, that purely economically stroke politically, that one fact alone could bring down both the Netanyahu government and the Trump presidency in terms of its effectiveness to govern past the midterms. What would you say?
I'm glad you asked me, Pierce. I think that it really lays bare the question, are we going to allow Iran to blackmail the entire world by saying, we are either going to close the Straits of Hormuz and drive up oil prices, or you're going to allow us, the Iranian regime, to survive, to create a nuclear program, which they threaten out loud and say death to America and death to Israel. A ballistic missile program, which will reach 8,000 ballistic missiles by 2027. Multiply 8,000 by the 10 people that died in Beit Shemesh. That's 80,000 Israelis alone. Are we going to allow the largest terror cancer in the world to survive because of oil prices? I think, Pierce, the answer is that we need to have steel nerves. I think that we have to not lose faith in the American people, the Israeli people, most of which understand, maybe not the two guests that I'm on the show with, that you have to have courage to defeat evil. If you think that we're going to leave the Iranian regime alone and it is just going to become a peaceful regime, that is a pipe dream. They are going to develop a nuclear weapon. And had we not struck them in June, the same ballistic missile that landed near Daniel today would have had a nuclear warhead on it. Every time we ask anyone on this panel, it is U.S. interests, it is Israel interests. And if we do not defeat Iran now and give those Iranian people, which is where this began a month and a half ago when Trump said help is on its way, 32,000 people were massacred in the streets. If we do not continue to deplete this regime and allow those people to bring in a leader, then we will be back in the same spot with a nuclear regime. And then I ask one question. What will be the price of oil when Iran has a nuclear regime and it strangles Hormuz? And it says, you're going to give me whatever I want. Otherwise, I'm going to drop a nuclear bomb on you. That is not far away.
Piers, I
guys, I'm sorry. We've run way over time.
Piers?
As long as it's very, very brief.
It will be very brief, because I think what we've heard here, and this is important, is a very glib, unfact-based, fantastical position from an Israeli spokesperson of a nuclear power. And we've heard something from Mr. Haunton, which I think should really have Israelis thinking long and hard. This is America. Israel is dependent on America. What are you doing to an Israeli image in America, which has already tanked during the relentless assault on Gaza? Americans are going to blame Israel for this, and they'll have a reason. This is seen as Israel first. And I think Israel is playing with fire in ways that could be spectacularly a blowback.
Well, I think it was Doran who said earlier that history will look back on this and judge accordingly. I completely concur. I just have no confidence that it will look back in quite the way you think it might, but it may be that the history will look back and say this was the moment when Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu conspired to destroy their legacies, or it will end up being their legacy in the way they see it. But I do think the stakes are incredibly high, and I do think anyone who says with any confidence they know how this is going to play out is living in cloud cuckoo land. I've got to leave it there. Very interesting debate. Thank you all very much. Because joining me now, live from Tehran, is Dr. Fouad Izzadi, professor at Tehran University. Dr. Izzadi, thank you for joining me on Uncensored. What is it like to be in Tehran at the moment?
We had the bombardment just a couple of hours ago. We have lost over 1,400 civilians, including 165 little girls. We are dealing with the Epstein class. They are bombing and killing little Iranian girls and raping little American girls.
The Americans and the Israelis believe that ultimately this is the beginning of the end of the Iranian regime, which has been obviously in power since 1979. What do you say to them?
You know, Netanyahu asked the Iranians on the first day of war to come to the streets in millions, and they are every night shouting against him and Trump. He has managed to unify Iranians. We have the Israeli around the flag effect. Trump single-handedly has unified Iranians more than any Iranian politician could ever do. It's a pipe dream. It's not going to happen. We have the Iranians have elected a new leader. The country is resilient. There is this culture of resistance. And you cannot bomb people and expect them to like you. People are not going to be foot soldiers of Trump and Netanyahu. They know these guys. They just finished conducting a genocide in Palestine. Why would you want to work for them?
But if that is your position, then why would you think you could bomb all your neighboring Gulf states and not expect the same reaction from them. I mean, we've seen the Prime Minister of Qatar overnight in an interview for Sky News, so, you know, expressing his outrage at what Iran has done in attacking Qatar. And we've seen Iran attacking Saudi Arabia, the UAE, other Gulf states, Bahrain. Why is Iran doing that? It seems to me that of all the things that you could do, which would be the most self-defeating, attacking your own neighboring Gulf states and alienating all of them in the way that you're doing is the last thing you should be doing.
You know, we have U.S. bases there. After the assassination of Qasem Soleimani, the Iranian general, the Iranians' response to that assassination was minimal. After the killing of Ismail Haniyeh, the Palestinian leader, minimal. And after the assassination of Hassan Nasrallah in Lebanon, minimal. After the 12-day war, Iranians announced they're going to hit one U.S. base. They announced the timing. They announced the number of missiles that they're going to use. And the base was empty. Minimal. No American soldier was killed in all these attacks on Iran. In the 12-day war, we lost over 1,200 civilians. The people who were exercising restraint are no longer with us. They were all killed by the Americans and Israelis. The new leaders in Iran realized that unless the United States and Israel pay a price, these type of attacks will continue every few months. You cannot run a country when two nuclear regimes attack you every few months. So the decision is to attack U.S. bases, not these countries. The only problem is that the U.S. bases are in these countries. So Iran is attacking U.S. bases. Iran is attacking hotels when they are full of American soldiers. What they have done is that they have evacuated the bases. They have put the soldiers in hotels. That becomes a legitimate military target. CIA offices, headquarters, in office areas in these cities, legitimate military target. CIA is providing the data for these attacks on Iran. And then you have Iranian missiles. Some of the missiles that are shut down, they create debris, and Iran cannot control where the debris falls. I was watching CNN. We had this oil facility in UAE in fire because of the debris. And then we had Tucker Carlson, the American journalist, reporting that in Qatar and Saudi Arabia, they have arrested Mossad agents trying to blow up things so they can blame it on Iran. I think Netanyahu has done a good job using American soldiers to fight his war against Iran. I think he wants to use Saudi soldiers, Qatari soldiers to do the same. I think the leaders of this country realize that's not a good idea.
Okay, but suffering. I would counter. Let me counter to you, which is that the leader of your country, both the assassinated leader, the Ayatollah Khomeini, and his now his son, but also the previous supreme leader as well, have waged a systematic policy as a country of funding and sponsoring terrorism through proxies like the Houthis, Hezbollah, and Hamas against Israel with a specific aim of killing Israelis and trying to extinguish Israel as an entity, as a country. Why shouldn't Israel seek to properly defend itself in that eventuality?
You know, last time I was on your show, we went through this. Hezbollah is not a terrorist organization. They were formed after Lebanon was occupied by Israel. Defending your territory, pushing out occupation is allowed under international law, and you can use force to do that. And so these are freedom fighters, and Iran wanted to make sure that Israelis would not do to Iran what they are doing today. Iran created deterrence in these countries like Lebanon, like Yemen, so Israelis would think that the cost of attacking Iran would be too much. And now that these organizations are weakened, you see what happened. They're killing Iranian leaders. This is a war of choice. They're not worried about Iran's nuclear program. I encourage your readers to read the U.S. intelligence community's assessment. It came out a couple of months before the 12-day war. It's available at dni.gov. It says three things about Iran's nuclear program. The first thing, Iran doesn't have nuclear weapons. The second thing, this is the assessment of the U.S. intelligence community. It says that Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon program. And the third thing, it says that Iranian leaders have not decided to have a nuclear weapon program. When they asked Trump about this report, he dismissed it. He chose to accept Netanyahu's version, and he dismissed his own intelligence community. So if you want to make sure that Iran doesn't have nuclear weapons, you can go back to the 2015 agreement. I don't know if you saw the interview of the Omani foreign minister. He went to Washington about 10 days ago, asking the Trump administration to accept an agreement with Iran. He said that the agreement was available in 24 hours, his words. It's available in YouTube, it's CBS News. He basically begged the Trump administration not to attack Iran. He said that Iran was willing to provide concessions that Iran was not able to do in 2015. And Trump attacked Iran, and it's understandable. If you want to change a country's government, you don't enter a diplomatic agreement with the government that you want to change. But they're not going to be able to change Iran's government. So it's a huge policy mistake. And unfortunately, we are seeing a lot of people get killed. Responsibilities of Trump and Netanyahu.
Professor Azadi, professor at the University of Tehran, I appreciate you joining me. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Piers Morgan Uncensored is proudly independent. The only boss around here is me. If you enjoy our show, we ask for only one simple thing. Hit subscribe on YouTube and follow Piers Morgan Uncensored on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And in return, we will continue our mission to inform, irritate and entertain. And we'll do it all for free. Independent, uncensored media has never been more critical, and we couldn't do it without you.